You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
O'clock. This hour, we're going to look at dignity, and we're going to look at dignity specifically in relation to children and our school infrastructure. And I say we're going to look at dignity because for me, when we talk about infrastructure, we are not only talking about material things like buildings. And proper sanitation is not just about a really nice place where you can go and relieve yourself. It fundamentally goes to the inherent self-worth that the Constitution confers on every single person simply in virtue of being human. And I was saying to my producer, Marva, that in fact, even though we've got three founding values in our Constitution, dignity, equality, and freedom and equality matter, actually, if you put a gun against the head of a constitutional lawyer and you ask them which one is the most important, so important that it cannot even be violated during a state of emergency, it is actually dignity. So dignity, equality, and freedom matter, but dignity is overriding, even more important than freedom and equality, and all the other important values spring from it. And the way in which we treat children and the way in which we deal with a crisis such as lack of proper sanitation, that tells you how seriously society in general and a state in particular takes its ethical, political, and legal obligation to make sure that citizens are treated with dignity. So for me, this is a really important national conversation. It is not just some conversation about how do we build better schools in Je. It's fundamentally about the self-worth of children who are some of the most vulnerable members of any society. And so we invited the Department of Basic Education to be part of this conversation, and I'm delighted that joining me in studio is Elijah Mshlanga. Of course, you all know Elijah. He's the departmental spokesperson, the head of communications nationally. Elijah, thank you for coming into the studio. We always appreciate it. It makes for far better communication than on the phone.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And in our Cape Talk studios, we've got Equal Education's parliamentary officer and researcher. Equal Education has been through a lot, to say the least, over the last year, but they continue to be one of the civil society organizations that we are all, including the department, all indebted to for the role that they play to hold us collectively accountable in terms of our constitutional duties that we have towards each other and towards the most vulnerable, particularly in the area of education. Siba Balwe, Xili Chana, thank you so much for being part of this conversation and coming into our Cape Talk studios.
Thank you so much for having me.
Elijah, I want to start with you. I'm a little bit confused, right? So the president delivers a speech with much fanfare, a renewed rhetorical commitment to make sure that we deal particularly with sanitation in our schools. Then I think to myself, okay, this is good, a new dawn for children. And then I think to myself, but I don't know, man. I can't keep track of every single news item, but certainly for purpose of preparing for an interview, we go back to the archives. There was a high court case in Bishaw where there was an attempt to make sure that the norms and standards that the basic education agree are the norms and standards that should define what the proper infrastructure of the school is get enforced. Mm. We then get told that actually in terms of hashtag fix the norms, that there won't be an appeal. And now I don't know what is truth and what is fiction, because it also seems at the same time that you may indeed be approaching the Constitutional Court in this matter. So just tell us what is factually true from a legal point of view. Are you initiating some sort of appeal process, or are you just accepting it that in fact what the court has decided is trite and we should all agree?
Well, there is an appeal process that is currently underway, appealing the Bishaw court judgment. The advocates, the legal counsel that advised the department on legal issues, felt that there was a case for the department to appeal because the responsibility of providing certain items that would make proper infrastructure in a school are not entirely within the Department of Basic Education's powers. They also rest elsewhere. And as a result of that, the advice is that we should go to the Constitutional Court to get that clarity. That's why there's this appeal on that matter.
Where does it lie, if not with you?
Well, it's the department, but also when we talk about sanitation, there is the Department of Water and Sanitation. You also have ESCOM in terms of electricity. You also have water. You also have water boards as well, and all of those things. So what the minister is saying is that it cannot only be her that should be held accountable if other entities of state are not playing along where they should. Of course, she has the responsibility to make sure that learners are adequately provided for, but she also needs to work with her colleagues in the executive.
But you know the two things here that sound very weird to me. In 2011, when the department accepted of its own accord that within 3 years, 510 schools need to be completely rebuilt, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously 7 years down the line, the number is only 189. So there's an example where you were falling short of your own agreed target. Mm. Now, logic, forget about law and politics, just logic dictates that if you agree with me, Eusebius, I want to build X number of houses, X number of toilets, X number of schools, that you are accepting it as in good faith that A, it is your responsibility and that you are capable. So if you are now running to the Concord for clarity, why on earth did you settle on the 2011 agreement?
Well, you know, it's always good to work towards a target. And it's not a bad thing that you even set high targets for yourself. Whether you achieve it, that's another matter, because reality on the ground will also show you that things are not as easy as they seem on paper. And one of the things that we've learned, for example, in the Eastern Cape is that we say we'll build 510 schools and we then get on the ground. You find that some of these schools that you want to replace, you cannot really replace them. You need to merge them. But when you talk to the community, they say, but this school has been named after a person that we respect in this community. You might not have been aware, but we cannot allow you to demolish this school. So you rather build here. And we say, but we can't build another school within a kilometer of another and continue to have infrastructure like this. We need to be clever in terms of our expenditure. And the community insists that, okay, if that's your position, then there's no building that is going to take place here.
So the community is to be blamed for why you underperformed by your own targets.
That's just one of the things. The other one was when we got contractors, big name companies that were given huge contracts to build schools, and some were liquidated along the way. Some took on a whole lot of work that they could not deliver on, and that also resulted in delays.
Whose problem is that? If you procure the services of useless contracting companies, should we feel sorry for you?
No, you don't have to feel sorry for
us. In fact, we should do more than that. We should hold you accountable, right?
Of course. No, we need to be held to account.
Okay, so we're not doing it right now. Yeah. Why on earth did you get contractors that couldn't perform the job?
When a person applies for a job, they give you a CV, and on the basis of that CV, you trust them and you give them a job. And the same happens here. Big name brands that have built huge infrastructure elsewhere that's been successful. And they bid and they get a job. You believe they will do it. And somewhere along the way, things happen and they fail. And their responsibility comes to you to have the account. And we've done that. And that, in the beginning, resulted in the delays, because even as DBE, we had never done that type of work before where we're project managing an initiative of that magnitude.
Which brings me to the second question that is bizarre about approaching the Concord now, though, Elijah, because basically, I mean, let's be honest about this and speak plain English here. Mm-hmm. What you've just told me 4 minutes ago sounds as follows. You're saying, Eusebius, my ANG doesn't have the backbone to call out her colleagues in cabinet. So we're hoping that maybe the jurors at the Constitutional Court can help us out with a very stern wagging of their fingers to say to Public Works, to say to the Finance Ministry and everyone else, please make sure you take collective cabinet responsibility seriously. Why on earth must you go to Braamfontein? If you think that your partners in government are not pulling their weight and this needs to be a collective state effort, and as a silo, DBE can't do this on its own, that's a political problem. You speak to your political colleagues. You don't run to the courts.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe you need both. You need to solve the political problems also using... You need to solve the political issue, rather, having gone to the courts to say, this is what the court says. Guys, can we now then get together and all of us prioritize education? Because other departments also have their priorities, which might not be aligned with ours. So it's important to therefore say, this is what the Constitutional Court says. We need to all realign our plans and priorities according to it. In that way, no one will be able to argue with you.
Would you agree with me that it is absolutely appalling politically that my ANG would need a court judgment to empower her to have a hard-hitting conversation in a cluster, say, for example, the economic cluster, about providing basic infrastructure for our children. There's something about that that is profoundly perverse.
Well, I think you are entitled to that view, but we
okay, tell me where that view is misplaced.
Well, you know, we work in an environment where she's responsible for a particular portfolio. Mm-hmm. And if you look at a delivery agreement, it doesn't say that she will also have to go to other government departments to try beg them to deliver on certain things. She works with what she has. Where she requires support, she will go to those government ministers, but they also have their own delivery agreements which go to a certain direction. So this constitutional court judgment, whichever way it goes, it will then assist the cabinet and everybody else that's involved to see that for a long time, when we say education is a priority, okay, in real terms, this is what it should mean, that everyone, whether you're a government department or whether you're a state entity, you really need to place education right at the top of your list.
Sipho Balwa, you've heard Elijah here at length. The RCD program was aspirational, though it was never intended to be taken literally. It was a case of, okay, sure, we'll see whether we can get 510 schools rebuilt. Then the communities got in the way, and now there is a lack of collective cabinet responsibility, which is why they're going to the court. Everything he says is convincing, isn't it?
I mean, potentially to some people, but not to us at all.
Break it down.
So just to respond to a few of the things that he was speaking to, on the issue that the department got legal advice and found that actually they had a case, or there was rather a case for the department to appeal, a few days ago the minister was speaking to the media and saying that really their appeal is, and I quote, an honest response to something that people are asking her to do but cannot do. And so it makes no sense for them to go out and accept, or rather lie and say, oh, we can do it when we can't. And the biggest problem there is, in 2013, when she promulgated these norms and standards, it was by the department's own analysis that, firstly, these are the issues that we are facing in terms of school infrastructure on the ground. But also secondly, that these are the timelines and the deadlines that we as the department are setting for ourselves in order to eradicate and rebuild and upgrade these schools. To then come back, you know, a few years later, once you've missed the first deadline and are basically on course to missing the second deadline, which is for 2020, it seems very disingenuous to then also use communities and IAs and contractors as the reasons why you've been unable to do your job. It all speaks to a lack of accountability, and particularly why we had gone back to the Bishop High Court was around, firstly, the wording in the norms case, the biggest issue being the escape clause, which is what Elijah is speaking about, that it is not within the competency of the department to do this. But again, no one forced the department to set deadlines. This was done by themselves. And it just feels so unreal to look back when you've been unable to do something, as opposed to have been at the forefront of it when it was happening.
Then he turns around, right? Then he says, okay, he's being wonderfully honest with us on behalf of my NGO. And he says, sorry, guys, we've never done this kind of project management before. We discovered with humility that the targets are targets that turn out to be infeasible for us. What must we do now that they fessed up to the fact that they lack the capacity to even be able to procure the proper services? Do you have any sympathy for that admission?
No, because in fact, where Elijah is speaking about underperforming contractors and implementing agents, I want you to know, Eusebius, that there isn't one implementing agent or contractor that has been blacklisted, that has been blacklisted for poor performance, particularly in building schools, and particularly in the Eastern Cape, where we have been calling for this. A lot of the work that we've been doing in the Eastern Cape has been around procurement and realizing that contractors are not capacitated to take up the contracts that they've been given. So essentially, sometimes they're graded higher than what they can, and what happens is that contract needs to be terminated, but the bid evaluation process takes 3 months before the next contractor can even be awarded a tender, and then they can start working on the site. You know what I mean?
Okay, Elijah, I want you to come in there. Who are these contractors that have messed up the taxpayers' money and the rights of our children, and have they been blacklisted?
Well, I don't have the list here because I'm not really involved in that part of the business. But I think, Yusibias, what I need to say here is that we need to separate ASIDI from the school-built projects that all provinces have, because ASIDI is just a small project that was supposed to supplement the work that provinces were already doing. So the school-built programs under the Education Infrastructure Grant and from the Backlog Infrastructure Grant as well, which is the money that provinces are using in their own corners to deliver, and their progress has been made. So if we confine this discussion to ASIDI only, we miss the point, because ASIDI goes to specific places to fix specific problems, but the general work of school infrastructure provision is a work that provinces do on a day-to-day basis. And in that regard, they have their own reports, they've made their own progress, and they have their own set of challenges. Depending on the province, it will have its own dynamics that we can discuss.
Sibabalwa, if we took the Accelerated School Infrastructure Development Initiative out of this conversation, does MyEnergy come out with an A for performance?
No. Absolutely not. In fact, so one of the issues that we had brought before the High Court in Bishop was the issue around the exclusion of schools for which plans have existed before. So essentially, we can argue that if schools had been accounted for before, and the norms and standards was then promulgated, even within that period, the department and the 9 MECs who are then in charge of not only disseminating these resources but also building the schools still wouldn't have performed in a satisfactory way. Mm. And at every turn, what we're seeing is that there are excuses and also a passing around of the blame or the responsibility for who actually should be building schools. But that is not even the biggest problem. We're losing children on the ground. It is unacceptable. Mm. I never went to a school like that. I'm pretty sure Elijah perhaps never went to a school like that. And a lot of other people in this country are fortunate enough to never have to know what it's like to be in a school that directly threatens not only your health and your safety, but also the kind of learning outcomes you build out of that space. Because let's not lie, the kind of environment that you're in definitely has an effect on how you perform in school. So then, how is it that many, many years later, we're still, what we're talking about, Eusebius, is whether or not the department has performed properly, and not rather. This is the plan that we have come up. We found that these are the issues that we are struggling with. This is how we're going to mitigate any further issues. It really is disingenuous. It really is. And learners on the ground are having to pay for it, unfortunately. Mm. But we can sit and talk about it all day.
We know the numbers. So if we talk about the entire country, not just the Eastern Cape maybe, schools without electricity, schools without adequate water supply, if any water supply, and without ablution facilities, what do the numbers look like?
So the Department of Basic Education releases what they call the National Education Infrastructure Management report, and this is a yearly report that they release that gives us a big scale picture on what education statistics for infrastructure look like in the country. And nationally, we have it breaks it down. So for schools with no water supply, currently that they say that it's zero. For schools without electricity supply, and also this was released January 2018. So schools without electricity supply, they say there are about 269, and so on. But here's an interesting thing. The department has now stopped reporting in the NEEMS report about the number of schools made out of inappropriate materials. Equal Education conducted school visits in the Eastern Cape earlier this year. I was one of the people that was on the ground that was visiting some of the schools, and this was a recap of the 60 schools we had visited in 2016. And basically what we're doing is going to go see if there have been any improvements in some of the schools, particularly because the outcomes and the findings of those school visits then get compiled into a research pack that then gets given to the department. But the department you know, depending whether they can or cannot, will or will not read it at their own time. But basically, I'm trying to just track whether there's been any shift in this, in this regard. And what we're finding on the ground is that there are schools that have had zero upgrades. There was a school that we went to, Lutoli Junior Secondary Primary. Since 2016, we found learners there using a hole in the ground as an ablution facility. And I'm not exaggerating. I had to watch children use a pit latrine with no roof, with no walls, with nothing, as the only form of sanitation that they had accessible to them, you know. And so what we're also finding then is that while the department will report one thing on the numbers, what we're finding on the ground is completely different. And even in their reporting of those numbers, they are constantly changing at every single point in time, which then calls into question, firstly, their data collection method. What is happening? What's going on? Why is there no synthesis between the departments, you know, and the nine MECs? But still, at a point where they want to appeal the only law that binds them to meet this responsibility. Yeah. And
okay, let me bring Elijah in here. Elijah, just firstly, right? So there's still some schools where you have pit latrines where ablutions are just not acceptable. Now, obviously, and we're going to do this in the second half of the hour, we can ask what the causes are. You've alluded to some of it from your perspective, and then we're going to look forward to what can we do going forward immediately, because we've got to solve this problem.
Okay.
But just in terms of a description of what it means to not have proper ablutions, do you accept, whatever the reasons for why the situation exists, that your department is trampling on the human rights of children?
No, we do.
You accept that?
No, we accept it, because our job is to make sure that there's a toilet in every school. And if there's no toilet in that school, then we should be held to account for that.
Not only that, the wording is important. Any school in South Africa that doesn't have proper ablution facilities, you accept that that constitutes a violation of the right to dignity?
Yes, we do, because our job is to make sure that it's there. If it's not there, then it's our responsibility.
Shouldn't you be looking more ashamed than you're looking right now?
No, we are. We are ashamed. I mean, the minister has said so before herself. It's not something that we are saying for the first time. She has said that it's actually embarrassing to go to schools where there's still no toilet. It's embarrassing. It shouldn't be so. It comes with a lot of indignity, not just to the learners, but to the people who work at the school as well. It's just
wrong. She must by now be one of the longer serving ministers, right? So her honesty in terms of admitting that it is a violation of human rights is fantastic. But quite frankly, do we deserve a minister? Do we deserve a spokesperson, advisors who cannot deliver toilets to our children? Do you think we deserve that? Put aside your head as spokesperson. As a citizen of the country, do you think you deserve a political principal that cannot even deliver toilet structures to our kids?
I think, Eusebius, that's where I think that's where we're probably in court, to say that, you know, her job is not to build the toilet. The toilet should be built by the province there. That's why we go around provinces, collect the information, and we also asked, why is it that there were still 37 schools in the Eastern Cape that had no form of sanitation whatsoever? And the questions were asked. I think what we also need to acknowledge is the fact that the minister, when Basic Education Department was established in 2009, we then discovered that there were so many challenges, because before that, there was this huge department with a single minister, and we were not able to get down to the detail of actually what the challenges were in the basic education sector. So I think the minister...
But it's 9 years later, though. How long do you need to get on top of the nature, the scope of the problem, and then come up with a plan that you then execute faithfully?
No,
it's 9 years. Must we give you another 50 years?
No, not really, Eusebius. A lot of work has been done. In fact, there are many learners in the Eastern Cape who were in mud schools and are now in proper schools. So progress has been made. It also needs to be acknowledged. But the challenge
is difficult
still there.
To know whether progress is made on that one, because you don't include the data in relation to schools that are constructed on the basis of improper materials. Why is that not a fact line item?
No, the information is there. It's easily available. Anyone who needs it, they can get it.
Okay.
Eusebius Mackayser on 702.
and Cape Talk.
25 minutes before 11 o'clock, this hour we'll be focusing on dignity and in particular the inherent self-worth that our children have, recognized by the Constitution. But what does that mean in the absence of many of our schools nationwide not having proper infrastructure, water provision, electricity provision, and decent toilets? If you don't have that, can you really be truly said to be living in a society that cares about the well-being and in particular the constitutional rights of children? And I'm joined here in studio by Elijah Mshlanga, who's still with me. And in our Cape Talk studio, we've got Equal Education's Parliamentary Officer and Researcher, Ziba Balwe Chilichana. Elijah just took a phone call there during the break. Were you calling a friend for help? Asking the audience? Ziba Balwe, I want to understand something that drives me nuts as a citizen and as a political analyst. Mm-hmm. We chose a very complicated governance structure in 1994. It has three spheres of government, which allows the governing party to dispense largesse to every comrade. And the idea was to devolve power. It was also complicated for historical reasons. We wanted to make sure that, you know, if the IFP does well in KZN, that they don't get upset, that they don't win nationally, they can still be in charge there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But now in 2018, you speak to Aaron Motsoaledi, and the guy goes, "Don't be mad with me that Freya Hospital is not run well, Livingston Hospital in PE is not run well. That's a provincial competency." When we had the textbook crisis in Limpopo, way back when Panyasa was spokesperson and I was on Talk at Nine, we had massive fights about who should take responsibility for it. And now we have another dimension to this problem, which is the idea that while it's not my beat at national level at any rate to worry about the nuts and bolts of the school, give me Equal Education's take on both of those. Firstly, can Minister Motshekga say, well, the building processes, that must be someone else's ndaba? And secondly, even if it was mine, please give me discount for the bad data about the progress because provincial governments have autonomy.
So while both the national and the provincial education departments have their separate roles when it comes to this, we still expect that they either communicate to each other or decide where the responsibilities really lie, because that doesn't change what the need is and what results we need to see. So, I mean, a good example is the fact that with the appeal, it's not just the minister that's appealing it. Hey, it's all 9 MECs of education that are also appealing this judgment. So really, every one of them is just as liable and responsible for building schools as the minister is. And essentially, all departments are also now liable for trying to evade this responsibility when it comes out. So, yes, there are provincial functions. Yes, there are national functions. Again, we're looking at the wrong thing. Who is really responsible is not building our schools on the ground. That's the first thing. And if we're going to disseminate it to such a micro level that we really are going to go to the contractors then, the people who are on the ground, who move the bricks and churn the cement, then why aren't you as the provincial, you know, heads doing something about those people who you know are incompetent in some respect, who you have cases of their underperformance repeatedly have seen or have had to terminate? And what we've seen in provinces as well is that the same contractor may work for different implementing agents. You know, that is something that they should have a record of, so that when someone has performed poorly in one respect, goes somewhere else, performs poorly again, we at least know who this person is and are barred from being working with the department, because it's a costly exercise. There's resources that I must add have been taken away from the infrastructure grants because of how poorly they're spending them, or in other respects how they are not spending them. So
what about the other argument then? Okay, so that takes care of the three spheres of government.
Right.
What about the argument that says that, I don't know, maybe go speak to Public Works?
It makes it really difficult that the buck cannot stop with the minister, which is what she's doing. Go speak to Public Works, go speak to Eskom. Where's cooperative governance? That's something that we should be seeing. And also it assumes that the department can't plan. that it can't speak with what you were saying, with she can't speak to her colleagues, they can't come together. And the fact that there was a provision for an escape clause in the norms and standards regulation already for us says that it was almost predetermined that at a point in time when they couldn't deliver, they would have a fail-safe of, look, you know, we are not the only people who are on the ground and who are responsible for this. But even more so, taking it a bit further than that, if you have realized that you are not meeting your targets and you're not where you want to be, Equal Education has tried on many accounts to reach out, to try and, you know, speak so that we all in one room, as people who are invested in not only the future and the well-being of our children, but also that want to make sure that everyone... Sure. goes to a dignified structure and Absolutely. Has the best experience in Absolutely. Trying to learn and build themselves. So that is another is another area now, is that where civil society does try to reach out and speak, those correspondences are met with no response. And what is happening instead is where we don't want to be going back to court, wasting time, dragging this through the mud, because at the end of the day, the law still remains. So the Concord potentially ruled that, okay, you guys can get your appeal. It's not a problem anymore. That doesn't erase the norms and standards.
That's all a very it good means. Point, yeah.
yeah. All it means is that, okay, now we need to actively start looking at other entities as well. But we have been calling for this anyway.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Okay, if you've listened to this conversation, what do you make of it? I hope that you are invested in this as a national crisis. Do you have questions for the departmental spokesperson? What are your own thoughts? Are you working in the education sector as well? What has been the impact? Perhaps you're a teacher in a school that is not properly constituted. Share your stories, your observations, your feelings. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. 18 minutes before 11 o'clock.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
Okay, so what are you hoping the court will actually say, Elijah? Let's cut to the chase here. When it comes to the duty to provide adequate electricity, water, and decent toilet facilities for our children, who within the entire state structure should have the responsibility to make the physical stuff happen?
Well, Cabinet will have to do that. What we hope the court case will do is, or the Constitutional Court will say, is to make everyone realize that they actually have a direct responsibility to helping us to deliver on the various items that are required in a school for us to be able to create a conducive, dignified environment.
Who's everyone?
For learning and teaching. Well, I mean, I've said if it's water, it should be water. If it's electricity, it should be electricity. Because we have also gone to the extent of using solar panels to provide electricity, using water harvesting methodology to try bring those services where we have not been able to win, where there are no bulk infrastructure services in such areas. So we hope that all spheres of government and all entities of state that are supposed to be providing services.
I find this absolutely mind-boggling. I'm not sure whether me finding it mind-boggling is disingenuity on my part or whether it is the right way to denude the madness of this challenge on your part as a department. Because it seems to me the level of specificity that you are hoping you will get from the court will look something as bizarre and complex as this. We hereby say, as Braamfontein jurors, that the MEC must do A, B, C, D. My NG must do E, F.1. And then the Minister of Public Works must do G.3, and here are your timelines. You basically want the Concord to give you an incredibly granular plan with KPIs for each particular department and official. I mean, that's madness. That is exactly why governments exist, that we shouldn't have to ask a court for that level of specificity.
It's madness if that's what we are calling for, but that's not what we are calling for.
So what are you calling for?
It's not madness. I think, UCBS, what we also need to clarify here is that it must not look like we are doing nothing and we are waiting for the court to tell us what to do. The fact that we are in court doesn't mean we have stopped doing the work. And it does not mean that we are refusing to do the work.
Okay.
The work
but continues. What do you want from the court? From Braamfontein? Ufunanton?
No. The court, we want the court to help us to strengthen the systems that will make sure that delivery happens at the pace that is satisfactory, at the pace that will make sure that we restore dignity to those schools which are still waiting for services to be supplied. Because in the years that we've been doing this, we've realized that there are serious areas that need strengthening, that needs tightening, and we need to be able to do all these things much faster, much better. And we believe that the judgment of the court will help in making sure that we work much more efficiently and we spend much more efficiently the money that has been allocated for school build programs.
Tell me this scenario playing out. I'm going to sketch for you one way forward, right?
Yeah.
Tell me what part of this is just too simplistic in terms of how reality works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's my Angie. She's on her phone. She's speaking to Cyril. President, I know I'm speaking out of turn, but that MEC in the Eastern Cape is useless, man. Please fire him. I can't do that. Next call. MEC, why the hell do you keep giving contracts to Elijah? You're embarrassing us there on 702. Elijah can't deliver. Can you please just do something about it? Get rid of the guy. Why can't you have those kinds of conversations? Isn't that how cooperative government is supposed to work and what it means to speak to your colleagues rather than waiting that a judgment will empower you politically?
It's not that the one is replacing the other. No.
Why is the other not working?
Well, that's politics. I'm not in that space.
What do you mean you're not in that space?
I'm not a politician.
But you have to explain your department to us. Why is the political strategy that I've just outlined comically, why is that not working?
No, we are delivering services, we're delivering education, we are learning, we are teaching, and we are making sure that our learners get to school, they get their feeding in all types, and that they are protected in our schools. That's what we do. But when an MEC somewhere is not performing, it's not even for the minister to handle, it's for the premier in that province to handle that. And those are issues that should be dealt with within the ruling party in that province. And that's what we have to make do with. As you were saying earlier, that we have chosen a governance system that allows for a province to determine certain things that must happen in that area. So that's where we are. Minister also gets frustrated about certain things not happening. All that she can do is to talk to the MEC if it's an issue that involves senior officials, and the DG will go there, do his part as well. But there's a certain limit to what you can do. The one thing we can say for sure,
even while taking into account the complexity of the political system we chose, the governance system, is that you have ANC MECs in these provinces, you've got ANC premiers, you've got an ANC national government. The ANC has messed up within the state. The rest is detail.
Well, that's your view. I can't comment on that. I'm here to talk about education. I'm not here to do political analysis.
No, the reason why the question is not an unfair question to ask you, you don't have to answer it, is if part of your deconstruction for why there are bottlenecks is that we are hamstrung by the party political system in the country and by the nature of the governance system, then it means we've got to ask ourselves, okay, then who are these political principals that have the prerogatory power to do something and do nothing?
It's not always the case. You know, Eusebius, in the Eastern Cape, there were instabilities when it came to the top management. I don't know how many HODs were there in a short space of time. There was no chief financial officer. There was no finance manager. And those professionals from the built industry would come, and 6 months later they would leave, and monies would not be spent because there was no proper management. There were no systems. There were no targets. And work was not happening. And we have now seen some stability, and now we are seeing something beginning to happen. So some of these things are not necessarily political. It's just the instability in that particular area resulting in the movement of people in and out of that department, thus affecting the work that they were supposed to be doing.
And okay, let's take a couple of calls before we run out of time. Sin, right. Good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. I'm a contractor in the Eastern Cape. I'm listening to your show. I'm listening to the department as posters. They advertise schools in the Eastern Cape, 10 schools. Mm-hmm. I think it's 10 primary schools. And the tender closed last year in September. Even to date, it has not been awarded. Mm-hmm. What are they doing?
Thank you.
Just ask that question again, Sintu. I just missed the last part.
I'm saying the Department of Basic Education advertised for the construction of 10 primary schools in the Eastern Cape last year, and the tender closed in September last year.
Okay.
Till now, that tender has not been adjudicated. They keep on sending the extension of validity to the contractors that have bidded.
Okay, okay, I hear you. Faisal, good morning to you. Okay, we'll come back to Faisal. Ido, good morning.
Hi, David, this is mind-boggling, man. I mean, we're sitting here and the government explains why it just challenged a court ruling, which outlined that this is our responsibility, this is what you're expected to do. And they say the court will go, but now they're challenging that because they want the court to do what? To explain their responsibilities? Don't they know what their responsibilities is? It's politics, man. I mean, the gentleman said that he's not a politician. It's politics. Because, frankly, for a kid to go home at Lala, it doesn't make any sense for him what all that he's saying here. All that kid from Ohio Tala expects is that the government must provide basic services for him, you know? And the Minister of Basic Obligation is the political head. You know, it's their responsibility. It's the political head. All these things about saying, no, because of the incompetent contractor who must deal with that. Honest, frankly, the contractor was contracted by them, you know, by the very same. So you can't come, I must not be, the kids must not understand that there's an incompetent contractor, therefore the government is not doing much. It's not doing much. I mean, frankly, there is an announcement by the president that they're going to do this campaign. One is that to show that they're doing something, but at a political level, they're challenging civil society what he's trying to do to allow the government to provide services.
Okay, thank you, Ida. Let's take a break.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
What do you say to Sintu? You've got 10 primary schools being advertised for, and the tender processes just seem to go on and on and on.
Well, in the Eastern Cape, there's currently a process of reviewing the schools that are being built, and some are being merged, others are being closed down, and that process takes time. So it could be that the process is impacted upon by that type of work that is currently happening, because we don't want to build schools where the numbers are dwindling, and there has been such in many parts of the Eastern Cape where people are moving to certain areas, so we don't want to build white elephants. I think that is the reason for the delays.
I know basically is saying the same thing that I'm saying, but perhaps saying it with more appropriate, I think, forthrightness. Why the hell do you need a court to tell you your job?
No, we know our job, but legal clarity is another. It's also important.
Our children can't eat legal clarity. They can't defecate on legal clarity. They need proper sanitation, etc., etc. You don't need legal clarity. You know what you must do. Just do it.
Yeah, but you also need a legal framework within which you will do your work.
That's called the norms and standards of 2011 that you've signed up for.
Yeah, that's just one of the things that we have as a tool for delivery in the education system. It's not just one thing that you need. We have a whole set of challenges that we need to address, and we don't need a single thing that will help you to
Siba Bal, where to from here?
You know, the first thing I would say would be the department often creates challenges for itself as well as it goes along. And this I'm referring to when they speak to how limited they are in their scope and what that they can do. And I want to link this to the availability of progress reports, for example. So the norms and standards say that every year the 9 provinces need to submit provincial plans and progress reports of where they are in terms of meeting the norms and standards and building and upgrading schools, and this then gets sent to the minister. But every single year, and without fail, the department and the minister have failed to prepare these and also have failed to make them publicly accessible, because it's one of the few ways that their communities, that communities can check the status of their schools, for instance, that learners know or principals know that my school is qualifies for these upgrades, and at this time, you know, the building or the contracting process will start. This year, we had to submit a PIE application again, and only then did we receive 8 out of 9 of the provincial plans and reports. Do you want to guess which province was the one without a plan that was submitted? It was the Eastern Cape. Also, the department with the biggest backlog in infrastructure. And no explanation was given to us for why that is, you know? So, you know, the department wants to speak about contractors and communities that make life difficult for themselves. The things that are easy for them to do, they don't do as well.
Okay.
You know? And one thing that we must be clear about is that if the department is sincere in wanting to carry out its mandate, in wanting to be open and accountable, stop recusing the blame. No one expects you to be Superman and do everything that is beyond your point, but there is a law, there are deadlines, and that we expect to be met.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Sibebalwa, thank you so much for coming into the studio in Cape Town, and Elijah here in Johannesburg. We really do appreciate it. A very important issue. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.